Welcome to this episode of the Security Clearance Careers Podcast, Clearcast, your source for security clearance, intelligence community, espionage, national security, and defense contracting updates. In our exclusive interviews with intelligence community and government leaders.
Hello, hello, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Clearcast. What is a mentor and why is having one so crucial to success? Or how do you make sure that you're an impactful mentor? But what about toxic mentoring? So on this episode of the Security Clearance Careers Podcast, we have veteran and entrepreneur and innovator Janice Omadeki, who answers these questions and more in her forthcoming book, Mentorship Unlocked, The Science and Art of Setting Yourself Up for Success. And in the book, she explores the mentorship advice that helped her start a groundbreaking company after studying entrepreneurship and strategic management at MIT and Harvard. And prior to owning her own company, Janice worked in the defense contracting space, one where it can be really difficult to identify and engage with mentors. So today we're going to discuss why mentorship isn't one size fits all, different types of mentors, what to talk about and what might be off limits with mentors, and so much more. But Janice, before we get started, thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited for this conversation. So I thought that we could give our listeners a little context, and if you could tell us about your experience working in the defense contracting space.
Happy to, because this is something that I never get to talk about. Interviews, and it is my first foray into the corporate world, and one of the biggest motivators that was a catalyst in my passion for mentorship and creating fulfilling careers and equitable workplaces. So I entered the workforce 2009, and my first job was working for a top 10 defense contracting company as their lead graphic designer at headquarters in Tyson's Corner or McLean, Virginia. And I mean, to say drinking from the fire hose is an understatement. I immediately went from, you know, that college lifestyle to reporting to multi-star generals and just really understanding everything that goes into defense contracting very quickly, and then bounced around over the next few years to other defense contracting companies. And that was really kind of my focus for the first 4 years of my career, just using my past performance in creative communications to help tell these complex stories and complex visuals of something that typically isn't as sexy as, say, you know, marketing for Coca-Cola Digital, let's say. Very different,
right?
Designing something for a CIED versus, you know, a more consumable product. But absolutely loved it, learned so much. I would say the part that was less than ideal was more of the old boys club and the way in which I felt excluded from mentorship and career development opportunities because I didn't fit the mold of a majority male workforce, and they didn't really know what to do with me. So I was kind of left on my own island sometimes in terms of my career development to figure out, you know, how to navigate the complexities of defense contracting. And over the course of that time, had some incredible resources and people that shared their experiences with me, but definitely felt left out of the mentorship conversation throughout that time.
Well, and a couple of things, just knowing how you got your start in the professional world, I can totally relate because I started in the defense contracting space around the same time. And as you refer to it as an old boys club, I referred to one of the defense contractors I supported as sort of this Mad Men culture.
Yes.
And being a woman in this industry was incredibly hard. And especially, I mean, this industry wasn't the first that I supported, you know, after school, but it was very intimidating, and especially finding a mentor and kind of the things that you know, we're discussing today. And so now that you're in the private sector, what other things are really difficult about working in national security?
Navigating the culture and understanding the internal politics, because there are the written and unwritten rules, and the unwritten rules, unless somebody tells you with exact details, you simply will not know. Like, you can't even really ask to learn about them. Somebody has to sort of choose you, bring you under their wing, and then teach you those unwritten rules, or, you know, the hierarchy of communications and the internal politics. And even then, the internal politics change depending on what part of defense contracting and sort of the key segment that the company you're working for focuses on. Because what the internal politics that relate to, say, an Air Force contract will be very different than the politics for an Army contract or something that's more heavily involved in InfoSec. Like, there are just so many different nuances, acronyms, key members of leadership, and roles and responsibilities that it can be hard to navigate those waters without the right mentor to really help you understand that and build those relationships accordingly.
Well, certainly. And as sort of a greener job seeker, you know, maybe you're supporting your first contractor and you're experiencing some of these toxic traits within companies. And so, you know, it can be easy to feel discouraged when you're navigating sort of this industry. And so, did you ever find a mentor in this space, or did you build that network after? Tell us a little bit more about building sort of mentorship groups.
Unofficially. So my first job, there was a vice president of business development that I reported into. And so I think he sort of saw me as this brand new baby doe trying to navigate this big world at 21, and took me under his wing and helped me understand how best to support him in his vice president of business development role. You know, there were a lot of amazing opportunities and a lot of rooms that I was brought into because of that. And I'll always be grateful to him and his advocacy. I also tried later down the line at a different company, a corporate mentorship program. And it actually is what spurred my distaste for structured corporate mentorship programs, because it was, let's just say, less than ideal. I think out of the group, there were three women. And so they just kind of paired the three of us together. So while everybody else had a one-to-one relationship, it was two mentees for the one woman vice president that was on the team. And it just felt forced, because you could tell that it was based on external factors versus skills, qualifications, or even succession planning for future roles. And when a company does that, your employees know. Like, you can feel when it is not an intentional connection that's being made, but instead something that's just kind of a quick band-aid and relying on surface level parameters versus something deeper.
Well, let's unpack that a little bit further. I'm really interested in this topic, just because I've never been a part of a corporate sort of mentorship program. Do they exist? Can they exist in positive environments? I mean, let's say, like, for example, I think national security is becoming more inclusive. It certainly has a lot of work to do in certain areas, but can it be a good thing, or have you just written them all off altogether?
Yeah, oh my gosh, absolutely.
Employee resource groups, they're kind of like informally these mentorship opportunities, but tell us a little bit about what a good one might look like.
I firmly believe in the power of corporate mentorship. For me personally, I did not grow up in a familial culture where networking and mentorship were widely discussed. And so corporate mentorship was something I relied heavily on to help me understand the working world and how to set goals and how to, you know, continue expanding my network. So I firmly believe in them. I think the issue lies in the way in which they're organized and the teams that are developing them, because sometimes it's just a matter of burnout or not knowing which resources will really help employees and wanting to do a good job, but just not necessarily having the support, budget, timing to make that happen. But when a corporate mentorship program works well, you can see an increase, a 5-time increase in salaries and promotions for those that are mentored, and a 6-time salary increase for those that are mentoring, which is a wild increase for people, especially in defense contracting. So I firmly believe in them. I think they're a great way to build intentional relationships, especially for those, and especially those in larger companies that maybe you're a part of one team, but you want more diversity of perspective, diversity of thought, but you don't really know how to go about it. It provides this concentrated time frame and space for you to really learn about another person, learn about your organization, and also learn about yourself and the type of leader that you want to become, either as a mentee or mentor. So I thoroughly support them. Two of my clients are actually defense contracting companies right now, and I'm helping them build a more sustainable internal mentorship program based on their employee survey results and sort of the customer discovery that I've done on their employee base to ensure that it's actually tailored to the way that their employees are thinking today with a lens on how they're building the future development of their teams.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. It's how these programs are built, but it starts with asking the questions of employees to make sure you're building the right thing. And so aside from corporate mentorship programs, like I said, I've never been a part of one. What parts of this industry make it difficult to connect with other, you know, mentors or leaders as a mentee if you aren't a part of one of those corporate mentorship programs?
Access and bandwidth. I think those are the two big areas, because those leaders, you have to think about it like a pyramid. You have more entry-level, junior-level employees. And then as their roles and responsibilities increase and you get up into mid-level management and then executive and C-suite level and senior leadership levels, there are just fewer people at that higher positioning. And so you end up having a distorted ratio of people that are seeking mentorship from senior leadership, but senior leadership only has but so much bandwidth. And so they have to be discerning in the number of people that they mentor, because they also understand the responsibility. I would say 90% of the people in senior leadership have been mentored and have been mentored successfully, which is how they got to those positions in the first place. So they do take that responsibility very seriously, and they want to make sure that they have enough time to dedicate to their mentees' development, but they simply can't mentor everyone that wants that level of mentorship. And so I think that's an area of development. But two, also having the opportunity to then develop those next line leaders, the director level and senior manager level employees, so that they can begin mentoring the junior and lower mid level talent, so that it's not fully dependent upon senior leadership and the multi-star generals that everybody sort of looks to for that career development.
Right. In terms of like making a connection, you definitely have to make sure that all of those sort of puzzle pieces are fitting together. And so let's say, you know, someone is interested in getting a mentor. How should listeners decide on who would be the best mentor for them in their career at this point? And, you know, like you said, it could be a bandwidth issue with, you know, some of these leaders that folks may have identified that, oh, hey, they'd be a great mentor for me and where I want to get to. But what do you have any tactical tips there?
Absolutely. And I will try to be brief, because I could talk. And this is literally what my entire book, Mentorship Unlocked, covers, and helping them build a streamlined system to build mentors, especially in complex organizations. So first thing I would do is assess what you actually want from a mentor. Sometimes people hear the title and they're like, yeah, I want one, but they don't actually know what they want to work on. So think about your next goals over the next 6 to 12 months. So are you looking for a promotion? Do you want to improve your program management skills? What do you actually want to work on? Next, think about how you are naturally wired. Are you a morning person? Are you a night owl? What type of personalities do you find you are more energized by? You can look at your friend group. You can look at the coworkers you spend more time with. That'll be a good indicator of the type of personality your mentor is most likely to have. Because at the end of the day, you want to feel comfortable with that mentor the way that you would feel comfortable with your favorite colleagues or close friends. Otherwise, the relationship can tend to be a little more superficial. From there, you have your goals, you know, the type of personality profiles, then you want to start engaging in what I call the watering holes. So spaces where you might be able to connect with prospective mentors that fit that persona. So this could be going to trade shows like AUSA or, you know, the Singapore Air Show, whatever it is, going to trade shows, going to, you know, the company softball league, entering into LinkedIn virtual groups. Like there are so many virtual and in-person opportunities now that we're kind of in this hybrid lifestyle to meet potential mentors that fit that persona. So start getting active in those, start building those relationships. You don't want to jump the gun and immediately say, I need you to be my mentor. So I would give it two or three conversations, see how you feel, see if they are receptive to mentorship. And then that's a good time to start formulating the ask and inviting them to be your mentor. Within that ask, you want to structure it with meeting maybe once a month for, say, 3 months. This is not a lifelong relationship necessarily. I think 80% of mentor relationships do evolve into that, but you want to take the pressure off because this person is very busy, as are you. So saying that you'd like to meet with them once a month over the course of 3 months is a great starting point. Discussing what you'd like to work on and how they would be impactful for you in developing that particular skill or whatever you're seeking to accomplish. That way you're painting a clear story of how they're the puzzle piece that fits into that narrative of your career development. You want to do as much work for that mentor as possible to make it as easy for them to slot in and focus on helping you evolve in your career versus trying to figure out what it is you even want from them. The last thing I would say is do your best to take the pressure off. Your one mentor is not going to have every single answer for you. So take the pressure off. Be a human being first. Get to know them as a person in addition to working on your goals. That's how you build a real relationship. When you think about your closest friendships or with the colleagues that you're close to at work, you talk about life. You talk about things outside of what's on your to-do list. And when you're able to humanize your mentor and kind of take them off that pedestal and see them as a person, that vulnerability exchange is where you're really able to learn those leadership skills from them and where they'll feel more comfortable helping you and being more open about their career experiences and wanting to open their Rolodex. And for the post-millennials, a Rolodex just means network. But wanting to open up their network and support you so that they know that it's not something transactional, but a real investment in building something meaningful and sustainable.
Well, and, you know, it's about putting yourself out there. And I love that you touched on, you know, learning about humanizing mentors. And so, you know, talking about personal experiences along with the professional. And so are there things that should be off limits when it comes to a mentor-mentee relationship?
Maintain professional boundaries, especially early on. So if it's something that you would not say to, let's say, your boss or a member of leadership within your organization, maybe don't say that with your mentor early on. So things that would be on your HR manual, avoid discussing those topics. Keep it positive, keep it professional, keep it polite. Yeah, that's what I would say. Maybe don't discuss your, you know, hangover on Thursday morning from whatever you did the night before. Like, let's keep it above board.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's a vibe, right? Like, so you meet with somebody once a month for the first 3 months. Yeah, they're not going to want to hear about your hangover. But, you know, if it develops into something where, you know, there's a personal friendship that goes along with it, like I said, it's a vibe. You kind of know it when you see it.
And you'll know it and they'll be receptive to it. But I wouldn't necessarily start with that. And then I also just want to piggyback off of the previous question in terms of deciding who would be the best mentor. Sometimes people get very consumed by the shininess of a title, label, or company in which that person works for or represents. And I encourage people to think instead about their own career development and who they think would be the best suited to help them grow. Because oftentimes, it may not be that senior vice president of communications or business development. It might be the program manager that reports into them that has spent the last 3 years learning from that individual and has the exact same leadership style and is more accessible. But if you're only focused on the shininess of the title, you'll miss out on a really engaging and sustainable relationship where you might actually feel more comfortable because they don't have that veneer of perfection that comes with the senior leadership team structure.
I love that you touched on it because as we're going through this conversation, I've been thinking about a few leaders like, hey, you know, they'd be a great mentor, but you can be blinded by that shininess. And so that's a great point. You may miss out on other mentors that can really help to catapult you into sort of the next step in your career. So let's talk about toxic mentors. Have you ever had one or heard of this? Or is this a thing? Or is it something I made up?
A good mentor isn't toxic. Mentorship, in essence, is not toxic. So if you're in a toxic dynamic, they're not your mentor.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm wondering, because, you know, everyone who is a toxic, say, coworker, they don't probably necessarily think that they're a toxic coworker, because then it would be a catch 22, right? Like, so have you ever seen, I guess, in clients that you work with that maybe previously they had tried to enter a mentor relationship and just, you know, thought the return wasn't there?
Thankfully, none of my clients. I have exceptional clients, and they really understand the ethos alignment and the importance of mentorship in developing their culture. That's typically why they find me. But I've heard the horror stories. You know, I experienced it, quite frankly. I wouldn't call them a mentor just because I understand what the definition is and the fundamentals behind it. But I was introduced to somebody through my manager at the time. And this was, I think 12 years ago now, which is crazy, but I was introduced to them because this person had a previous background in graphic design, and I was a graphic designer at the time, and that was really the only basis of this connection. And so the conversations were a little awkward, and this person, we just had different views of the way in which women develop their careers. This person was also a woman. She had recently begun building her family. And I think, and I have a lot of empathy for her because she had just started, you know, family building and family planning and all of those things. So there was a lot of excitement for her around that. And I was 23 at the time. That was not something on my radar. I was just focused on paying off my student loans as fast as possible, becoming a creative director, and sort of advancing my career. And I found that the advice typically skewed more on, you know, don't worry about that. Focus on getting married, focus on having children. And there wasn't that understanding, despite repeated conversations of that's not what I'm focusing on right now. But that would be the extent of the toxicity that I've seen. I think the toxicity label, if you will, which I'm still struggling with, if I'm honest, that label comes from a misalignment of vision and a mentor or a prospective mentor's inability to see the mentee and meet them where they are. So I wouldn't necessarily call it toxicity. I think it's a lack of listening and a lack of understanding, and perhaps the assumption that what the mentor experienced is what everyone is going to experience at the same time or the same life stage without practicing that empathy and almost like customer discovery of understanding where that mentee is coming from, what they're seeking from you, and how best to support them, because it's not about the mentor in that moment. It's really about the mentee. And so if a mentor is able to put their ego aside, put their lived experience aside to a certain point and really focus on which pieces of their lived experience is relevant to the mentee based on what the mentee is seeking to expand in, then you don't really run into that toxic label. And I think now in this post-pandemic space, we're all so eager to connect on a deeper level and so eager to be empathetic and understand where people are coming from that you really don't run into that as often.
Well, yeah, thank you for sort of busting that for us, because, you know, that mentor that obviously was kind of misaligned with you, perhaps they would be an excellent mentor for someone else. And so thank you for those insights. And thank you for all the insights during this conversation. And of course, thank you for joining me. I did want to give a space before we sign off. Any closing thoughts for our listeners today?
Mentorship is an incredible tool, and it's not as challenging as people make it out to be. You are a rock star, and you are so capable of building those relationships. If you need more support and you want more tactical and strategic advice, my book, Mentorship Unlocked, The Science and Art of Setting Yourself Up for Success, is available for pre-order and available everywhere April 2nd. And it has scripts, it has templates, and it is chapter by chapter the process that I followed throughout my career to build some incredible, meaningful mentor relationships that have brought me to this level of success, and I know that it can help you too.
This podcast is brought to you by the National Security Hiring Team at Booz Allen. Threats to national security are accelerating, from expanding attack surfaces to global adversaries. They work with leaders across the intelligence community to solve critical challenges today while innovating solutions for tomorrow. Accelerate mission impact and explore careers at boozallen.com/intelcareers. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of ClearCast. Hit the subscribe button and share this episode with your friends and colleagues. For more security clearance updates and national security career advice, subscribe to news.clearancejobs.com. If you have an active clearance, refresh your profile and search Cleared Careers at clearancejobs.com.